This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
WPHT, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will.
This is the next generation of talk. Now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
Well, I'll tell you what. They're angry at Ron DeSantis, are they not? Big protest plan for his speech at the Union League tonight. Oh, they're going to protest, all right. They're not happy he's coming to PA. But the question is, am I going tonight? I can neither confirm nor deny. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. And either way, I live by the Italian code of you just shut the blank up either way. So don't worry about it. I wish I could share, but I can't because that's how I roll, baby. If I'm told to keep something a secret, I do. It's how I roll in life. Because loyalty is everything, obviously. And speaking of loyalty, you know, the issue of the upcoming presidential election, which is going to be, before we know it, Pennsylvania is going to be ground zero for this and all these candidates coming in. Interestingly enough, His Royal Highness King Philip the Unaccountable in California, in New Jersey, I mean, he's actually in California today where he's doing some sort of a mental health summit, which is all going to be about banning guns, let's face it, in the wake of the shooting out there. So, but if Biden doesn't run again, obviously Newsom, Murphy, I mean, these are guys who are going to be running for president of the United States of America. There's no question in my mind about that. And they will not weep if Joe Biden is not the candidate. They'll be excited about it. Very, very excited about it. But there's a lot of things going on in education that I wanted to just turn our attention to very quickly because it involves Ron DeSantis and this issue of, and this, a little bit of controversy around this. Remember, the battle right now in our schools and for school choice is something that is I think, the fight of our lifetime. And you got to make sure you get good people to run for school boards, and you got to make sure that those good people can win because this is where the fight is. And in Florida, DeSantis did a couple things. I want to play you a quick clip right now. First of all, he went after the unions. And remember yesterday on the show, if you missed it, it's a podcast for you. I talked about the connection between the Ku Klux Klan and the National Education Association and their advocacy for a federal Department of Education and federal education standards. The Klan, like the NEA, was against school choice and against the idea of children going to parochial schools because at the time, many of them were run by Catholics and the Klan hates Catholic people. So they were against that in a big way. And the NEA was against it because they want to have the control over what your kids learn. And this is where the Klan and the NEA were simpatico. Today, the fight continues with a bloated federal Department of Education that does not educate a single child and waste a ton of money. And actually, all it does is redistribute wealth. That's really what its job is. But it comes in with core curriculum standards many times, ties it to money, try to hold the states hostage in that sense. And the battle over the teachers unions, and this is something we've talked about, whether it comes from masking our kids or keeping our kids out of school or whatever it is, the battle is always against people like Randy Weingarten, a little troll under the bridge who tries to take your kids' milk money all the time. That's the battle right there. It's always going to be the battle, and DeSantis is doing something very smart. He is going against the unions in Florida. Why not? He won without them. He battled them. They spent a ton of money trying to make sure that he would lose re-election. He won re-election. Let's start with cut number four. Matt DeSantis.
We also are going to be advancing proposals to make sure that teachers' paychecks are protected. They are not going to have, if we do these reforms, automatic deduction for school union dues. That's your choice. If you want to do it, you know, send money. That's fine. But to have it automatically deducted when you sign an authorization form, they don't even tell you how much is being deducted. You know, that's not right. So we want more transparency into how that is done. And we believe that a school union has a responsibility to notify the members of the costs of membership. We also believe that you should not have the school be a focus of school union politics and politicking and handing out literature and doing all that stuff. You do that on your own time, not on the public's time. We also believe that, and it will be reflected in this proposal, you know, if you're somebody that's working for a school union, you should not make any more than what the highest paid teacher is making. And that's just, you have these people making huge amounts of money, and the teachers are making half of that amount of money. How is that fair? How is that something that makes sense? And so having partisan groups basically get special privileges for deductions and all these other stuff, you know, that doesn't work. And so I think this will be a huge, huge boon for transparency.
Now, I never loved the idea of having the state cap anyone's pay, but the other stuff I absolutely totally agree with, which is the notion of turning around and saying, we're not going to just automatically give you our money. I know so many people that were teachers or are teachers, and they don't like the fact that they have to basically opt out of being part of the union. And that's a problem for them because of the peer pressure that's associated with it. But there was a controversy that happened. And this is regarding African-American studies courses on the AP level. So DeSantis discussed his reasons for barring public high schools in the state from offering AP African-American studies courses presently in development by the College Board. And the Florida Department of Education recently informed the board that the course's content is inexplicably contrary to Florida law and significantly lacks educational value, adding that the state would reconsider the course should the organization make the material lawful and historically accurate. DeSantis, who signed legislation last year preventing the state's government schools from teaching discrimination on the basis of race, color, or sex, detailed a number of his concerns in the course of a press conference. And I'll play you a clip from that in a moment. He said, they're advocating things like abolishing prisons. Now, that's a radical political position. You're free to take that in your own life. I don't think very many people think that would actually work. But how is that being taught as fact? He believes radical left-wing content in the AP African-American Studies curriculum, which is currently undergoing pilots at 6 schools across the nation, stands blatantly at odds with the policies preferred by racial minorities. He said, quote, it's not fair to say that somehow abolishing prisons is linked to black experiences, that that's what black people want. I think they want law and order just like everybody else wants law and order. So that is more ideology being used under the guise of history, and we want to do history. Now, remember something. We've talked about this with our buddy Amon Brown before, who's running for mayor of Philadelphia. You go to West Philadelphia, you talk to the people on the streets there, they want more cops on the streets, not less. And they certainly do not want these gangbangers being returned to the streets. They want them locked up behind bars. I'm talking about black residents of the city of Philadelphia do not want prisons abolished. They want these criminals to be in them. They want them to be in those prisons so they're not on their streets shooting and killing kids in the crossfire. That's what they want. Now, they write USA Today and Ipsos did a poll. They say 28% of black people support defunding the police. I don't believe that for a moment. I think it's way too high. Well, 18% of the overall population said the same. I also don't believe that either. But I think what happens is a lot of times people get calls from pollsters and they don't want to sound racist. So they go, oh, yeah, no, totally. It was like these white liberals in their big mansions on the main line, and somebody calls them up and they're having the Chablis and the goat cheese and they're going, no, oh yeah, no, no, no. Yeah, definitely defund the police. And close prisons? Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And it's like, Buffy, is our security system armed? Because getting a little nervous out here, you know what I mean? They also say right now, DeSantis says he does not view black history as inherently distinct from the overall history of the nation. That's what our standards for black history are. It's just cut and dry history. You learn all the basics. You learn about the great figures. I view it as American history. I don't view it as separate history. And also, it's important to note, too, that history, like everything else, is always through the lens of however it's taught. I mean, that's the thing about history. None of us were there. We can't prove it on our own. We have to go through other people's eyes and tell those stories So obviously, whose stories you decide to tell and through what lens and what prism, that matters in a big way, clearly. And too often what we find, unfortunately, is that those stories are taught by people that have a very different view of what went down and how we should talk about this country. And this is like that battle over the 1619 Project, which I've told you and we've had guests on and we've talked about this before. The 1619 Project is a gross distortion of American history when it comes to slavery. But if you have an agenda and that agenda is to prove that America is a hateful place, even though all these people want to come here and we're just racist and we were born in our colonial roots and our slave roots and everything like that, because ultimately, at the end of the day, your goal is to knock down the pillars of capitalism. Well, then, yeah, that's how you're going to teach it. That's the lens, because that's what you want to achieve. That's your goal, obviously. The College Board's website suggests that a major in the subject of African-American history can prepare a student for only one career field, community organizing and activism, even as the organization says a history major can prepare students for a multitude of careers, including anthropology, law, and foreign service. You see, obviously, this course is intended to advocate left-wing advocacy and left-wing grievance. And we talk about the culture of grievance and grievance politics all the time. And this is why the battle over critical race theory, as it's called, is also so incredibly important, too, because you don't want to have children taught that white people are bad just because they're white. I remember this clip from this father who was speaking, I think, in Michigan. He's black. His wife's white. And he said, "I don't want my kids thinking that their mother's a racist." And I thought that was just a profound comment from the guy, right? The College Board has so far declined to publicly release the African American Studies curriculum, asserting that the material contains proprietary information. And it's being used in these pilot programs. And DeSantis also launched an overhaul in the state university system's use of diversity initiatives. He asked the post-secondary institutions to provide the state legislature with a brief description of each diversity program, the total funding used to support the program, and the portion of the funding that came from taxpayer dollars. This is all good because these are public schools. That's his job as governor. So I applaud it. I say bravo. Private schools, teach whatever the hell you want. I mean, knock yourself out. But if you're going to public schools and these places are already bastions for left-wing indoctrination and you run for office and you say, "I'm going to rein these things in," then you do it. You rein them in. Quote, "We must ensure school systems are responsive to parents and to students, not partisan interest groups, and we must ensure that our institutions of higher learning are focused on academic excellence and the pursuit of truth, not the imposition of trendy ideology." He also talked about how this course includes queer theory. I don't know what the hell that means. Cut two.
In the state of Florida, our education standards not only don't prevent, but they require teaching Black history, all the important things. That's part of our core curriculum. This was a separate course on top of that for advanced placement credit. And the issue is we have guidelines and standards in Florida. We want education, not indoctrination. If you fall on the side of indoctrination, we're going to decline. If it's education, then we will do this course. So when I heard it didn't meet the standards, I figured, yeah, they may be doing CRT. It's way more than that. This course on Black history, what's one of the lessons about? Queer theory. Now, who would say that an important part of Black history is queer theory? That is somebody pushing an agenda on our kids. And so when you look to see they have stuff about intersectionality, abolishing prisons, that's a political agenda. And so that's the wrong side of the line for Florida standards. We believe in teaching kids facts and how to think, but we don't believe they should have an agenda imposed on them. When you try to use Black history to shoehorn in queer theory, you are clearly trying to use that for political purposes.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll go a step further, and that is, of course, the left is twisting all this to say they're banning books. Banning books. They're book bans. Book bans are happening right now. Here is Michael Beschloss, historian Michael Beschloss. You always have to say that by law, too. He was on Morning Joe this morning with this gross exaggeration of what's happening. Cut three.
You know, was it the idea of our founders, as we're now seeing in Joe and Nika's home state of Florida, Was it their idea that books would be banned and taken out of classrooms?
Right.
And you'd have lists saying these books are okay, these books are not. What you want is exactly right, and Richard says it extremely well in his wonderful book, which is you have to train kids so that they can think and understand the ideas and the values and the ideals that our country stands for, and be able to see that maybe some of them would agree with banning books, but that's a policy that has to be debated. You know, anyone who, as we've seen in the last few years, has the idea that this should be an authoritarian society with just one set of ideas and, you know, one religion is wrong and another race is wrong and certain gender, you know, a gender is wrong. I mean, these are things that most Americans could never have thought of during the last two centuries.
Let me ask Michael Beschloss a question. How many students in public schools read Dr. Thomas Sowell out of curiosity? Just out of curiosity. I mean, he's one of the most brilliant guys that's ever lived. He's an economist and also a historian as well. He's black. Has a much different view of this country than you do. How many kids read his writings out of curiosity? No? Because if they don't, is that a book ban? Like, in other words, if a lefty teacher in a public school doesn't teach Dr. Thomas Sowell, doesn't use his curriculum as part of his course, is that a ban on Thomas Sowell? Or is it that the lefty professor decided to go a different way and to use historians and economists who back up what his overall thesis is for the course? Classrooms and schools have to make decisions regarding budget and regarding curriculum. And it's not a ban on a book if you can still buy that book. Nobody's banning books. I mean, there's not a single bill that would ban a book from being sold on Amazon.com in the state of Florida or Barnes & Noble or anything else for that matter. No different than if a school decides we're not going to have certain movies in our library either because we just don't think that they're appropriate for our students. You know, we don't think that X-rated movies are appropriate, or we don't think that Birth of a Nation, which President Woodrow Wilson, total racist, screened at the White House, which is a pro-Klan movie. If they don't show those things in school or stock them in the school library, it's not a ban. It's a decision based on limited space, limited money, and also, yeah, what we want to teach our kids. But the kids are still free to read that stuff on their own time. Nobody's stopping them. I was not exposed to Dr. Thomas Sowell when I was a kid in high school. My first exposure to him came at the University of Maryland when my buddy Greg Renoff, one of my lifelong buddies, when I were walking through the campus one night, and I remember this. Maryland had, like every other public school with their nonsense, you know, celebrate diversity. That was all the thing. I remember this like it was yesterday. It was a beautiful night walking through the mall, as we call it in College Park, right on the campus or in the main campus, right by McKeldin Library. And they have all these signs, you know, celebrate diversity. And Greg made a comment about that, like, you know, this is silly. And I said, well, what's wrong with that? You know, I didn't know any better. I'm a freshman in college, right? He goes, well, why do we always have to celebrate what divides us? Why don't we ever celebrate what unites us? What makes us, you know, similar in all these various different things? We're always trying to pick ourselves apart, and we're always trying to find different ways to say, you know, this is a grievance, that's a grievance, this group's different, that group's different. And, you know, there's a lot that unites us and binds us we just don't talk about. And then he suggested to me that I read Dr. Thomas Sowell. And that was a game changer for me at that moment from my perspective of my critical thinking, because I was exposed to him because my friend told me. My friend and I both went to the same high school, and neither of us had ever read Thomas Sowell in high school. And it was a pretty conservative high school for a public school. But that's what I mean. These questions of what we teach our children, what we stock in libraries, and what we expose them to are debates. They're policy debates. That's why school boards matter. But it is a lie. It is a blatant lie to say that they are bans, that they're book bans. They're not. Just like I had to go and spend my own money to buy Dr. Thomas Sowell's books, these students, if they want to read some wacko, queer theory, gender, whatever, then they can spend their own money and buy those books. And Amazon will happily ship it to them at their house probably within 15 minutes. Or they can download it on their Kindle in seconds. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. We got a lot to do, including Bucks. What's going on with the Pride flag ban? I'll share that with you a little bit close to home. And yeah, the Biden document scandal not going away. Were Biden's Senate files in Delaware inspected? Were they searched? And should they be? We'll tell you what the latest confrontation at the White House was all about. Don't go away.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Zioli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
And if you Tuesday afternoon, big day. I'll tell you, Matt DeSantis, I think A Conflict of Visions might be my favorite soul book.
That one's good if you like political philosophy.
Which I do. But you're going basic economics?
That's my all-time favorite book because it had the greatest impact on me personally. I was kind of like apolitical before I read that book.
See that?
And it's for anyone who hasn't read it, I promise you, it's not boring. It's not like a bunch of supply and demand curves. I know it's called basic economics, but it's simplified so a dummy like me can understand.
Oh yeah, Harvard graduate dummy like you can understand it.
I'm only smart because of Thomas Sowell. Anyway, it's compelling.
Well, I love Conflict of Visions because I love how he breaks it down about, you know, this the constrained vision, the unconstrained vision. And obviously we're still dealing with all those battles today. It's terrific stuff. Boy, how nerdy is this conversation, huh? Which which Thomas Sowell book do you like better?
He's got a new book, amazingly, coming out this summer.
That's why I wanted to ask you, Matt DeSantis.
Yeah.
Are we getting him on the show?
I am desperately going to try to get him on the show. There's no one on earth I would rather have on the show. And this is no exaggeration. There is not one person I would rather have on the show than Thomas Sowell.
David Hasselhoff?
Well, close second.
I'm going Hoff. I know Henry's backing me on this.
I did like him in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. And I've never read Thomas Sowell, so I'll go with Hasselhoff.
The fact that you know the Hoff from SpongeBob and not from Baywatch or Knight Rider is very terrifying.
Well, I was too young. I wasn't alive for those.
Yeah, but you're alive now, and you can go back and watch
those
things.
I'm not watching those cheesy 80s, 90s shows.
Oh, dude, Knight Rider's fantastic. Please. Yeah. But I digress. So Thomas Sowell has a book out. What is it called, and when's it coming out?
Well, you put me on the spot. I actually don't know what it's called.
All right, but you reach out to his publisher.
I have not yet, because it doesn't come out till like the end of the summer, so I figured I'd give it
some
time.
We got to lock it down now, because these other hosts here are like sharks.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
You know?
He's still technically affiliated with the Hoover Institute at Stanford, and one of my former roommates did her undergraduate degree from Stanford, so I'm hoping she can like log in as a alumni and kind of like pilfer his email address for us.
Yeah, get the actual email address, not the fugazi one they give out. You know what I mean?
As opposed to the generic one that he never, ever checks because I've tried it a million times and have never gotten a response.
By the way, on Capitol Hill right now, I just noticed that they're having a session on Ticketmaster and ticket prices because Taylor Swift... her fans have been reselling her tickets for tens of thousands of dollars. There were more than, I think, they say 3.5 billion requests for her tickets. That can't be right, can it?
Oh, yeah.
Half the planet? There's no chance.
Yeah.
Half the planet's going to see Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
Is that
you
true?
You request tickets, Henry?
No, I'm not a Swiftie.
I didn't request tickets.
Swifties are, they mean business.
Rich, did you request tickets?
I did not.
So collectively, we're at 0%.
Yeah, on the show. It's a very unscientific method.
Yeah,
though.
Let's go. Yeah.
It's a small sample
this
size.
This is not the
admit.
Demographic. This is not her demographic, huh?
Well, I don't think.
Well, I see Senator Marsha Blackburn was just speaking, and so Live Nation, which is Ticketmaster now, Live Nation, they're blaming bots, BOTS bots, for the Taylor Swift sale meltdown. And I guess what happened is all these fans tried to buy tickets, and it's kind of like what happened to the fake farmer Bruce Springsteen when his tickets started going for like $5,000. But I think her tickets go for way more than Bruce Springsteen's tickets do.
Yeah, because so she can actually sing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. She's actually talented.
Yeah.
So they're having this hearing on Capitol Hill about this right now. But obviously, you know, my radar goes up whenever we talk about government action on these things, because at the end of the day, these are private entities. But there is an antitrust issue involved in this, which was first raised really by, believe it or not, Pearl Jam back in the 90s when, I mean, it was early aughts, but they went on Capitol Hill. And I remember Eddie Vedder was saying this. The problem is that they don't have the ability to compete fairly and sell tickets on their own, because all of these places are Live Nation venues. And in order to have an event there, you have to use Live Nation's ticketing. Like, you can't have, I couldn't rent out the Wells Fargo Center for Zioli Show on Ice, which we're definitely doing. But when Zioli Show on Ice happens, I'd have to use like the pond in my white trash blow up pool in my backyard, because I can't, I'd have to use Live Nation for the tickets. And that's where they say the antitrust issue comes in, because it then forces you to only go through this one method. And then these bots come in and they wind up doing all these things. So anyway, it's a very fascinating issue. And we'll follow this and maybe bring it to you tomorrow, because it's the intersection, of course, of economics, antitrust, government action. And let's face it, Taylor Swift, not too hard on the eyes, as I'm watching right now in Fox News. The dude's dancing with her. Also, not so hard of the eyes, I'm sure, ladies. I'm sure you probably would agree with that, right? Am I right? 855-839-1210. Coming up, a local school district bans pride flags. I'll tell you why. And also, too, the a very, very big comment from somebody that you know very, very well in the Philadelphia sports world regarding freedom of speech, and particularly on college campuses. So you're definitely going to hear this and the latest on the Biden scandal. 45 minutes of nonstop talk coming up straight for you. Don't go away.
Thanks for listening to the Zioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
Oh, no. How will we ever get back to Bikini Bottom now?
I can take you there.
Don't. Would you stop, Henry? Honestly, you're just the worst. You are the worst. The absolute worst. Do not play SpongeBob. Stop. I feel like I'm home with the kids right now.
Wait.
Stop it.
Who are you?
I'm David Hasselhoff.
Thank you very much for that. Excellent way to kick off the hour of 45 minutes of nonstop talk with a little Hoff. 855-839-1210 is a number, and on Twitter at Rich Zioli. Yeah, we'll come back to the whole issue with the Swifties and Ticketmaster Live Nation. I do think it's a fascinating story. But I digress, because I wanted to turn to this. You know, this show, I'm always a passionate advocate for freedom of speech. As you know, we love freedom of speech on this show. And on our station, we always say that free speech lives here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, a great slogan implemented by our esteemed corporate shill overlord, Greg Stocker. And it's very, very important to be able to express our profound support of freedom of speech. Daryl Morey, who we all know because in Philadelphia, he's involved in something with Philadelphia. What is that, guys?
He is president of basketball operations for the Sixers.
Boom. There you go. Well, he wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal. The numbers show that MIT has a free speech problem. At this world-leading research institution, 40% of faculty say they self-censor more than in 2020. 21 years as an executive in the NBA has taught me to start with the data when confronted with a problem. Now I'm asking my alma mater to do the same on the important issue of free expression. MIT has suffered embarrassing incidents regarding free speech in recent years. These include the cancellation of Professor Dorian Abbott's John Carlson lecture on climate change in October 2021. And the institution of a March 2022 policy that students may not ask others to wear masks. That was a policy they put in place. You may not ask another student to wear masks. All right. The data point to a growing problem, according to the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, located right here in Philadelphia, by the way. FIRE. They're fantastic. Bring them on the show all the time. MIT ranks an abysmal 181st out of 203 universities when it comes to students' belief that the administration will protect their speech rights. In fact, FIRE reports that this mistrust extends to MIT faculty. 38% say they don't believe the administration would defend a speaker's rights during a controversy. 40% of MIT faculty said they were more likely to self-censor as of summer 2022 than they had been before 2020. Among students, 41% are not confident in the administration's ability to protect controversial speech. And Daryl Morey points out, you know, these are disheartening statistics for one of the world's best research institutions. institutions. If MIT faculty who are at the cutting edge of science and technology can't count on their employer to defend open inquiry, it might prevent them from taking innovative risks. This in turn would stymie technological progress and the education of the next generation of innovators. To use an analogy from basketball, he says, MIT's refusal to protect the free speech of faculty and students is like asking players to shoot long two-point shots despite the benefit of taking riskier but more valuable three-point shots. Protecting free speech inherently involves risk. If faculty and students are free to speak their minds at MIT, there will be times when people are offended. But by coupling free speech with a culture that encourages perseverance, empathy, and a willingness to discuss controversial ideas, those apparent offenses can become valuable lessons. Now, the fact that he's speaking out on this is fantastic. It really is, because more people have to speak out on this. There's such oppression going out there when it comes to freedom of speech. And if you remember, he spoke out on China, too. He tweeted out back on October 4th, 2019, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." He's been one of those people that's been very brave in this battle. But how many people, I mean, in your world right now, would you take the time to write an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal going after the college that you graduated from to slam them on freedom of speech? And Daryl Moore is doing that because this is a growing problem on college campuses throughout our country. You want to talk about those idiots on MSNBC Morning Joe that I played you with, you know, book bans. No, there are no book bans, but there are actual speech bans on college campuses. Ron DeSantis is not doing a book ban in Florida, but at many of these colleges, there are speech bans. They cancel speakers all the time. They cancel controversial debates and curriculum. They'll cancel a pro-life speaker coming to campus because it might trigger a college girl who's had an abortion. They won't allow, you know, Ann Coulter to come or Milo Yiannopoulos because they can't keep them safe. That happened at Berkeley, California, of course, when I went out there years ago. And what led to, of course, Ann Coulter being forever dead to Dawn Stensland. But I went out there in a show of support for Milo and Ann Coulter at the time because Berkeley, California canceled their speeches because they said, "We can't keep you safe," which is what is known as the heckler's veto. I come out and I go, "Look, you might say things that are controversial and I don't know, somebody may egg you or kill you. So therefore, can't guarantee your safety, can't allow you to speak." And you go, "Wait, are you kidding me right now?" Berkeley, the birthplace of the free speech movement, back when liberals actually had a compelling passion for freedom of speech. Berkeley, California is turning around and using that old heckler's veto line. "Well, you know, I mean, wish we could help, but we can't. So in order to protect your safety, to keep you safe, we're not going to let you speak here." Please. He said, you know, part of what being in college is all about, obviously, is to question long-held assumptions. And at MIT in particular, this is one of those places where you have to question long-held assumptions. But you step back from this for a moment and think about the larger context of science today. And what do we deal with, right? You have scientists out there that think climate change is not nearly as bad as what the left makes it out to be, what Al Gore yelling about boiling oceans and, you know, rain bombs and that sort of thing. You have scientists out there who argue that climate change is a result of the sun, the natural progression of the order of the universe, et cetera. Those scientists are not welcome on college campuses. Their works are not welcome on college campuses. They're not allowed to have speaking engagements there. These colleges were all in on COVID, with the COVID jabs being required for their students to be able to be on campus, masking, of course, as well. And the colleges were also all in on defending China when it came to the lab leak theory, because some of these colleges get students from China. And and I should mention, they allow China to surveil their students on campus. This is a growing problem we've addressed on this program before, where a student at a college in the United States of America will have the watchful eyes of the CCP on her at all times. So if she were to go to a, you know, Free Tibet rally or something like that, the Chinese spies who were there would know about this. We've talked about this. Not a conspiracy theory. It's actually real. And the colleges cooperate with this stuff because they don't want to lose the money, the donations, and also, yeah, the pipeline of students. To ensure continued innovation and global leadership, Daryl Morey writes, MIT President Sally Kornbluth should endorse the MIT Statement on Freedom of Expression and Academic Freedom. The statement, released in June and adopted by the faculty on December 21st, is the culmination of MIT's ad hoc working group on free expression. The group was commissioned in January by then-President Leo Rafael Reif to review free speech policies and propose policy changes. And the statement calls on MIT to embrace its tradition of, quote, provocative thinking, controversial views, and nonconformity. While community has the right to expect a collegial and respectful learning and working environment, the institution cannot prohibit speech, but some experience as offensive or injurious. The statement affirms that a debate and deliberation of controversial ideas are hallmarks of the educational and research missions and essential to the pursuit of truth, knowledge, equity, and justice. Now, think about that for a moment in the context of everything we battle about and talk about today. The word trigger, which is something that we've talked about, heard about for years, right? Oh, that's a trigger to me. You're triggering me. Don't trigger me. The notion that your words, like what Cher said before she blocked me on Twitter, words are like weapons. They wound sometimes. They don't actually wound ever. They're just words. And if they break your heart or they upset you or they offend you, that's how you interpret them. And like anything else, you know, what's said to one person may not have the same effect on another person. It's not a trigger. It's a word. And if it does trigger you, well, then you have an option. The option is to not be part of it. But instead, what people do is they say, that triggers me. Therefore, I want the entire event shut down. I want the campus speaker booted off campus. I want the class canceled. I want the professor fired. And I want any student who was part of it thrown off campus. Let's also think what this means, too. When Donald Trump was president, Betsy DeVos was the education secretary. And one of the things she did was to undo an Obama-Biden policy, which held that if a young man on college campus is accused of sexual assault, whether it's rape or rape, as Whoopi Goldberg put it, or anything else, a woman revokes her consent weeks later, which has happened. The young woman who's the accuser doesn't have to face the accused. But you have a constitutional right, obviously, to face your accuser. It's part of the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. But on these college campuses, even though they're public universities and they're quasi-extensions of the state for that matter, you won't get to face your accuser because it may be triggering for her. And they have these kangaroo courts and they kick these boys off campus. They're done. They're guilty as charged and they're out of there. And their lives are ruined, even if they've done nothing wrong, because it's not a fair process. But that's where that triggering idea comes from. To avoid trigger under any way, shape, or form, you have to then go that step as well. And it's a damn shame because we've destroyed young men's lives over nothing. BS charges or a consensual night that turned into a regret weeks later, which then consent was revoked. And then therefore the guy is now suddenly a rapist. I mean, it's just bizarre things. Well, Trump tried to undo that. Betsy DeVos did undo it. Joe Biden's administration put it back in. Why not? I mean, they were the administration that started this nonsense, these kangaroo courts on college campuses. Think about something else, too, which is whenever a college in the United States of America today starts telling their students what is the accepted level of thought, and these students are paying an awful lot of money to be there, way too much if you ask me, and they're worried about their success on that campus, they're going to wind up going along with whatever the indoctrination masters want from them because they want to get good grades, because they want to then graduate and get a degree and then go on and get a job to pay for all this freaking college debt that they've just accumulated. So it becomes a vicious cycle. And the only way you can deal with it, the only way is to come out with an absolute commitment to freedom of expression like what MIT has drafted up. And so Daryl Morey concludes his piece by saying, to maintain its status as one of the finest research and educational institutions in the world, MIT must make a strong public commitment for free expression. This will ensure the institution's continued dedication to the pursuit of knowledge, innovation, and science. The left doesn't want any of that, though. I mean, you realize that, right? They don't want debate about science, because if you debate them on science, take the COVID vaccines, for example. They don't want to debate on booster shots. I shared with you that story yesterday from Melissa Finley at The Wall Street Journal, who said the bivalent vaccines are not working. These boosters are not working. They're not effective. Why are we doing this? In fact, they're causing more harm, side effects alone, because of the fact that they might actually be making your body's ability to fight COVID way worse. But you can't debate that in many instances because it's not science, because the intelligentsia decides what is science and what isn't. The newest thing now is eating bugs. You know, you got to eat bugs now. And if you suggest that maybe at the WEF, the World Economic Forum, that they were telling people to eat bugs, get your tinfoil conspiracy hat on, you kooks. They would never, ever want to do that. Well, I have a story today about cricket powder making its way into foods. And a whole bunch of stories that my friend sent me about all these kids out there who are now being taught to eat insects in schools around the world. But if you actually debate the science of climate change the way you're supposed to, you'd find out this is nonsense. It's completely unnecessary. In fact, it's harmful to human beings to eat bugs. But you're not allowed to have debate. The left doesn't want debate. That's the key. They don't want it. They want to shut you down and silence you. Whether it's debating climate change or COVID, the origins of COVID, the vaccines, whatever it is, if the efficacy of masking, they do not want to debate you. They want to tell you you're an idiot and shut you up. How many times, and just ask yourself this question, how many times have you ever had a conversation with somebody on social media, whether you've been on Twitter or Facebook, and somebody on the left has insulted your intelligence? How many times has that happened to you? Happens to me all the time. And look, I get it. I am one of the smartest guys out there, but still. No, I look, I mean, it happens to me. It's going to happen to you, too. That's what they do. That's their tactic. That's their strategy. It's to insult you. They don't want to debate you. They want to insult you. Have Daniel Turner on the show, and Daniel Turner will do what he always does, which is a phenomenal job of explaining why climate change hysteria is nonsense and why fossil fuels are doing more to help the world, more good in the world, why capitalism does more good for people in the world. And they will call him an idiot and say he's just, he doesn't read, or he reads MAGA. And then they start that other nonsense they do. Well, MAGA, MAGA moron, you know, and they start insulting you about being an inbred and everything else because they do not want the debate. And what's happening in college campuses right now is that they're becoming so insular in their thinking, and then they're graduating people who go to work for corporate America. And what happens in corporate America? You know exactly what happens in corporate America. They start doing their woke nonsense. Why? Because they just hired a bunch of woke college kids. That's why. And these woke college kids believe that everything they think is right. For example, recycling. You know, recycling is like one of the most important things you could do for the planet, right? I mean, if you don't recycle, you are a horrible human being and you really deserve to die because recycling is everything. And if there's one thing you should do right now, it's recycle something, anything. But maybe not. What if it's all a bunch of BS? As John Stossel writes, for decades we've been told recycle. And I think it might be recycling night in my town, as a matter of fact. Let me just tell my wife, if she never listens, but if she were to listen, hey, come on, she got better taste in this radio program, please. But honey, I think it's time. I think we're going to take out the recycling bin tonight. If you are listening.
Couldn't she lie and just say that she listened? You wouldn't like question her as to what content she found. You know,
well, I was going home and give her a test. I'm like, here, when did I say this? Fill it out. Fill out the form.
Is it multiple choice at least, or is it like a short essay?
Who did I call the fembot today? A, Karine Jean-Pierre. B, Karine Jean-Pierre. C, Karine Jean-Pierre. Come on, honey, I'm making this easy for you. She doesn't listen when she's in Cape May either. You remember that. We had the live show. You were there, Matt DeSantis, for that with the Grand Hotel, and she's in the back chit-chatting the whole time.
I do remember that.
Remember that? I had to yell at her and
her
friend.
You called for her. I don't remember why.
Because they sat there chit-chatting the whole time. That's why.
Oh, yeah. She was making a lot of noise in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot that was her.
God forbid her talking. Oh,
yeah, in my live radio show, Henry. Exactly right. Thank you.
Well, everyone else was quiet and listening intently, and there was a bit of a ruckus coming from her table.
That's my point. The two blondes in the back. I'm like, zip it. But recycling.
You're lucky she's not listening because you might be in trouble when you get home.
I know. Well, one of my friends is going to send her the podcast. Watch. That'll be the one time she does listen.
Henry,
I was in the
this.
Car.
Yeah, I'm podcasting.
Yeah, Henry will
going
do
up.
You're not getting her number, pal. I'll tell you that. John Stossel says, you know, for decades we've been told recycle. If we're not using recycled paper, we're cutting down more trees. Says Lynn Hoffman, co-president of Eureka Recycling. Recycling paper or cardboard does save trees. Recycling aluminum does save energy, but that's about it. The ugly truth is that many recyclables sent to recycling plants are never recycled. The worst is plastic. Plastic. Even Greenpeace now says plastic recycling is a dead-end street. Hoffman often trucks it to a landfill. Years ago, science writer John Tierney wrote a New York Times Magazine story called Recycling is garbage. You know, it set a New York Times record for hate mail.
Mm-hmm.
But what he wrote was true. And I believe now if you don't recycle, you are shot to death by your local town. I may have that way off, but I do. I think it's required. It's mandatory, and you got to do it. Otherwise, they'll take your kids. But he says it's even more true today than it was then. Recycling is an industry that uses increasingly expensive labor to produce materials that are worth less and less. It would be smarter to just dump our garbage in landfills. People think landfills are horrible polluters, but they're not. Regulations, occasionally government regulations, are actually useful. Make sure today's landfills have protection barriers so they don't leak. Eventually, landfills are turned into good things like ski hills, parks, and golf courses. Many of them are built right on top of landfills. But aren't we running out of landfill space, right? Isn't that the other thing? Alarmist media said that for years, we're running out of landfill space. What are we going to do? We get no more room to build landfills. But that's not true. In 1987, the media gave lots of publicity to a garbage barge that traveled thousands of miles trying and failing to find a place to dump its load. But that barge wasn't rejected because there was a lack of room. States turned the barge away after hysterical media suggested it contained, quote, infectious waste. The Environmental Protection Agency later found out it was just normal garbage. Landfills have plenty of room for that. In fact, America has more space than we will ever need. Sometimes states and businesses even compete to get our garbage. That's true. If you think one of the United States is a football field, all the garbage that we will generate in the next 1,000 years, ready for this, would fit inside a tiny fraction of the one-inch yard line. Putting garbage in landfills is often much cheaper than recycling. Many towns would save, like his would, $340 million a year if it stopped recycling. I always laugh about this too because I don't know how it is in your town, but inevitably I'll hear the rumbling of these gigantic trucks coming down the street. And I always think about how funny that is to me. They're coming to pick up my recycling bin, and the guys get out and they grab the bin and they load it up and it dumps into the thing. And this thing's lumbering around the town. Every 2 weeks it comes and it's spewing whatever the hell it's spewing out of the engine. And then it drives over to the landfill and then it dumps all this stuff there. The amount of energy required in this is amazing. But I just chuckle over that all the time. It's like when Disney bans plastic bags in their store, but every single toy you buy is a plastic toy made in China, but they won't let you bring it home in a plastic bag. It's like stuff like that just gives me a chuckle, a warm, fuzzy feeling. But it's a religion, though. Climate change is a religion, and I told you the ultimate goal is to destroy the pillars of capitalism, and recycling is no different, obviously. People demand it. It's a sacrament of the green religion. The religion's commandments are complex. New York City orders John Stossel to place recyclables at the curb between 4 p.m. and midnight, rinse plastic containers, separate paper from plastic, metal, and glass. Paper must be tied with twine into bundles no larger than 18 inches and so on. There's a reason why recycling fails. It's so complicated, people never learn the rules. I didn't know this until recently when I bothered to read what my county sent out to me with their recycling propaganda. Because one time I had the recycling police come to the house. I ever tell you the story, Matt DeSantis?
Wait, that's an actual thing?
This actually happened to me.
I didn't know there were recycling police.
So I put the recycling can out on the curb the night before like I'm supposed to. And the next day there's a sticker on it. And it says, we are not taking your recycling today. Because I put in a Windex bottle and apparently I was supposed to take out the nozzle.
What?
You can't recycle the freaking nozzle, even though it's plastic. Do you know this?
I had no idea.
Nobody does. So my recycling was rejected. Look, I've been rejected a lot in my life. This hurt. Just kidding. I've actually never been rejected, but you know what I mean. This one hurt. Well, there was a one time in college, but she went on to regret it years later. Anyway, I'm digressing here. But the point is, this one hurt because I was now stuck with this giant blue monstrosity loaded with recyclables. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? So what did I do? I got a contractor bag. I loaded it up and I threw it out is what I did.
You threw it in the ocean.
Yeah, I went down to the Delaware River and I threw it right into the river. Just kidding. I have the EPA police coming to my house tomorrow taking my kids. No, I threw it all out because I didn't have a place to store it. I didn't know where to store it. And it was the summer and it stunk. So yeah, I'm not going to have all this stuff like sitting there and, you know, filled up with 99% of it being Miller Lite cans and, you know, the other 1% being a can of SpaghettiOs or something like that. I'm not doing that. And people do that all the time, though, of course. So the other thing that I learned recently is that when you have a tin can, like I made this phenomenal Sunday gravy the other night, and I put pictures on Instagram of Reagan and Claire cooking if you want to check it out. We took a big thing of Alta Cucina tomatoes from Italy. They're phenomenal, the best you can find. And my winemaking buddy, Don Federico, and I'll be making some wine with him on Saturday, as a matter of fact, he gave me those. And they're great. They're from Italy. They're phenomenal. Anyway, the big can, and I have never done this before, but I actually peeled the stupid label off just to see what it's like to peel a label off a can. Because this whole time, I have not been doing that. Do you do that?
No.
No, do you do that?
Of course not.
No, because nobody knows what they're supposed to do, but it doesn't matter. You know why it doesn't matter? Because they're throwing it all out. That's why it doesn't matter. The reason why you're not getting letters telling you anymore why you're doing it all wrong is because there's no market for the recycling. And so the stuff is all winding up in landfills or getting burned up anyway. But it doesn't matter. They're still going to go through this exercise every 2 weeks because recycling, like everything else with climate change, is all entirely a show. It is a show to make environmentalists happy. Plastic also cannot be recycled. That's the other issue right now. If you rinse a plastic bottle in hot water, the net result is more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than if you threw it in the garbage. And since most plastic can't be recycled, I should say most, what's the environmental solution now? Stop producing it, says Greenpeace's John Hosever. Lots of environmental groups, of course, now want to ban plastic, but that's just silly. Plastic is useful. Using it creates fewer emissions than its alternatives. Plastic bags create fewer than paper bags. A metal straw has to be used 150 times before it creates less pollution than a plastic straw. Environmental groups rarely mention that or how they misled us every year about recycling year after year. It's appalling, Sasso writes, that after telling people for three decades to recycle, they don't even apologize for all the time and all the money that they wasted. Instead, they have a proposal to ban plastic that will make life even worse. Plastic is not evil and recycling is no climate savior. When Los Angeles mandated it, they added 400 big, noisy garbage trucks, which creates a lot of pollution. But environmentalists still demand we do things like pick through our trash, switch from paper to plastic bags that rip. California even banned small plastic shampoo bottles. But how do little people wash their hair is my question. Sorry, that was totally wrong. It was inappropriate. Some of these rules are just so arbitrary and silly, complains Tierney. It's simply a way for the Greens and for some politicians to pretend that they're saving the planet. Now, they're not done yet, because now they want us to eat bugs. And yes, this all came out of the WEF. Not a conspiracy theory, and it's also true. But if you turn around on a college campus and suggest that they should stop recycling on that campus, that it's a waste of time, may even be more harmful for the environment, good luck. That's all I can say. Good luck. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Let's do this.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.